This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Ukinex. Ukinex provides digital solutions and teams to brand CMOs, VPs, and marketers looking for true transparency in the biddable media space. From paid social and PPC to complex platforms like the Trade Desk, brands from across the world have connected to Ukinex. Visit them today at ukinex.com. And No Kid Hungry. We're proud to promote No Kid Hungry and their many initiatives to help kids in need of meals. No Kid Hungry helps kids be kids, not be hungry. Visit them at nokidhungry.org. And finally, we're proud that Season 3 of the CMO Suite is presented by the CMOCouncil.org as their official marketers podcast. The Chief Marketing Officer Council is the only global network of executives specifically dedicated to high-level knowledge exchange, thought leadership, and personal relationship building among senior corporate marketing leaders and brand decision makers. The CMO Council's 15,000-plus members control more than $550 billion in aggregated annual marketing expenditures and run complex distributed marketing and sales operations worldwide. For more information on membership, visit thecmocouncil.org. Let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello and welcome to the CMO Suite. I am your host, Sean Halter. As always, the CMO Suite is brought to you by Connectivity Holdings. I am incredibly excited to have as my guest today. We are out in Los Angeles. This has been a fantastic trip for us here, and I was incredibly excited that my next guest was willing to come down from San Francisco just to be on the show. It is Donovan Neil May. Donovan is the Executive Director of the Chief Marketing Officer Council. And Donovan, look, his background is fantastic. He's a founder and executive director, as I mentioned, of the CMO Council. They are a global affinity network of more than really 15 or 16,000 senior marketing executives. He's going to talk to us a bit more about that. We have also been incredibly blessed that we are one of their official podcasts for the year, and we've really had a great opportunity to be able to expand our relationship with them. And so I'm really excited that we finally have you on the show. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, great. Look forward to it.
We've had several. How did I do on that intro? Did I hit most of it?
You home run all the way.
A home run all the way.
Yep.
We've been lucky. We've had a few different guests on in the past, and that's really, in some ways, what got us the chance to meet you or talk to you guys a bit more over at the CMO Council. There are only a handful, and really a small handful, of organizations out there for CMOs, and yours is certainly one of the largest. How do you? I'm going to jump right in here. How did you build it up so big so fast?
Well, it's actually a fascinating story. We started off in Silicon Valley about 15 years ago in the dot-com or the dot-bomb bust. And I invited a group of CMO, of chief marketers from tech and telco companies to come to a brand recovery summit. This was trying to recuperate the credibility that had been lost in tech stocks and tech companies after the big downturn. And we were sitting around a table, and the chief marketing officer from HP was there, and he said, "Wow, this is fantastic. I've never sat and hobnobbed here with my friends and colleagues in the Valley. We should do this more often." So I said, "Great, you guys can be my advisory board." They were all speaking at the Brand Recovery Summit, and we'll get the show on the road. And it's just mushroomed from there and multiplied globally. We have 7 regional advisory boards. We have 16,000 members and 10,000 companies and 110 countries. So it's a good representation.
Do you know them all by name? No, I'm just kidding. That's a lot, right? How did you get in the space? Where did you grow up?
I'm originally from South Africa. I went to university there. I worked on newspapers there. Went to Italy to play some professional rugby and get knocked around a bit.
Ooh, how was that?
It was a lot of fun. It was a whole cultural immersion in a very different part of the world. The south of Italy is very different than the north of Italy. And traveled around all over Italy with this team I was playing for. And
professional, semi-professional?
Yeah, I was semi-professional at that time. It is nothing like it is today.
Sure.
But
that got you out of South Africa, and that's where you ended up.
Exactly. Every South African, every Australian, every New Zealander wants to travel, and we end up always going to Europe, and that's where I was. And then I went to London and started working at an agency in London, and actually in those days handled the Avis rent-a-car account
for Europe,
for the UK actually, but it was the launch of their big campaign, We Try Harder, which was really a big organizational branding promise.
That promise still actually resonates to some extent today with that brand. It's funny, if you're of any age, I don't know how old you are, sir. My club age is 38, 39, so we're probably not too far.
We're 6 months
there
apart.
You go, 6 months apart. But I still remember that. that campaign. It is amazing sometimes when you think of the thousands and thousands and thousands of campaigns that come out every single year for all the brands that are out there, people that listen to this show that are CMOs and VPs, and they're trying to either build the next campaign themselves or work with their agencies out there to do it, that there are still some campaigns that really still resonate today, or that you can remember that we're able to cut through that clutter.
And the good thing about that, you can really deliver on that promise. So the trick there was getting the entire organization of customer service reps, anybody that touched or interfaced with the customer,
to buy into
this. This is way beyond the days where everybody has a mobile digital device, everybody's a social media page or whatever the case may be. Here we were doing things like newsletters, and we were recognizing and rewarding people for going above and beyond.
But it was above and beyond at the time.
Yeah. Nobody was as a number two contending brand against Hertz, it was a fantastically, I think, seductive and a really, really honest promise that they had to deliver on that. And they had to accommodate and make sure that they didn't fail on that promise.
I do sometimes find that if you're a number two or a number three, or you're just a brand that's in that space, you do fight a little harder. And sometimes those campaigns can just be more fun because you can maybe take a little more risk. Yeah. If you're number one in a category, you have to play it safe sometimes just to make sure that you don't make a huge mistake. But sometimes when you're down there a little bit, it really allows you to just be different.
Well, I agree with you 100%, and I'm a big admirer of T-Mobile and what they've done to disrupt their category.
Well, he's turned
space.
That upside down, hasn't he?
Yeah. You know, that's all about attitude. It's all about creating sort of an emotive appeal and being, in some respects, coming at it with a non-traditional approach and very inventive in how they've done it and very competitive in how they've gone about it.
I think somebody likened him or the fact that you would even know that the CEO is immersed in that to some extent. That's unusual sometimes for a brand of that size, but somebody equated some of what they're doing, or T-Mobile in general, to a little bit of just, big time wrestling to some extent, a little bit of WWE out there. Like we're just going to kick down some chairs. And
there's a culture there for sure. And it's a personality. It's a CEO driven personality, mindset that, and it's an attitude they have, and constant innovation, which I like the most, and looking at all of the deficiencies, looking at the incumbents as being unresponsive to their customers and largely predatory in their pricing. And so a value sell, addressing different segments of the market, coming up with a hip, cooler, more, contemporary image, not being stodgy and
staying
and
ahead of the curve.
Yeah. And just being, and I remember converting to T-Mobile probably 5 or 6 years ago, and saying to the Verizon Wireless guy when I disconnected from them that you guys better watch out. These guys are coming hard.
They're coming hard. So you spent some time at an agency in England, and you worked on that business. And then what brought you here to the States?
I got married to an American, and that got me, entry into the States. I was also working on Kawasaki motorcycles for this particular agency, which was quite interesting because motorcycle racing and motocross is very big in Europe. So that was a good experience. And when I went over to New York, I was, walking the streets looking for a job, and there was an agency that just won the Subaru of America account. And so I ended up with a little known company.
What was the name of the agency? Do you remember?
Sorry, the agency.
What was the agency in New York that you ended up working at?
It was a company called Dudley Anderson Utsi, which was ultimately acquired by Ogilvy and Mather, but they were the oldest, actually, continually operating PR firm in New York. And so I started off actually more in the PR and promotion side of the business, and then I ended up with this account, and that then went on to adding more clients that were more packaged goods, and then I went into maritime transportation. So it was a whole different experience in New York.
How did you like living in New York versus living in London?
Well, New York was a cultural, for me, it was going from London, which is more culturally aligned with South Africa as a colonial country, to New York with the brash, hard-driving, competitive, you've got to...
You seem like you have some of that in you, though,
Covers for the rugby field.
Yeah. And how long did you stay in New York?
5 years in New York. And then I suggested that to them that it would be a good idea to have a West Coast office. And I was tracking what was going on in Silicon Valley. And so they had never had a West Coast presence. So I opened up an office and started from ground zero there. And, you know, in those days, this particular agency I was working with was very strong in the food sector, particularly with commodity marketing, things like fresh fruit and vegetables and mushrooms and mm-hmm. Granny Smith apples and Tabasco sauce and things like that. And they had they were very, very good at that area. And I replicated some of that in California, but then I went into the tech sector. And some of my early clients actually were Michael Dell, which I worked with for 5 years when he was still
running it.
He was running it for sure, and he was rather youthful. And he was also, you know, defining a whole new business model, direct relationship marketing, and you know, disintermediating the channel and building product they were ultimate in the advance of personalization, but also customer intimacy and understanding exactly where their products were placed, how they were using, how they were configured, and being able to deliver more solutions and services and added value to the customer than a traditional dealer-driven operation.
A lot of marketers, certainly those that are younger, have no idea really about that Dell story or how innovative that was at the time. My kids wouldn't know what a Dell computer was.
Right. In those days, it was called PCs Limited, and Michael Dell did start it in his dorm room at the University of Texas, and he actually dropped out of college to pursue this phenomenally successful. What he did was start to build very powerful personal computer systems for engineers and scientists who couldn't get them off the shelf. And then he started to do that through direct response marketing, particularly through newspapers and you know, ads and mail and direct mail and things like that. So it was a very different model.
But used marketing to grow that brand to an incredible height based on competitors.
And again, another example of disruption in a category space, because they were going head to head with. In fact, we had a strategy where we were actually targeting. There were other players like Dell or PCs Limited at that time, like Archway and others. But we went directly to the top two. The brands in that space, which was IBM and Compaq, and we took a shot at every single what we thought were deficiencies, and obviously with them it was the dealer interface and the inability to provide really good technical support. You know, their front office people, their point of pain began at the point of purchase for folks like that, because they were dealing with people who in that time and place were not very digitally savvy.
Well, think of again even how contemporary that thought process is. You know, brands always need to be thinking about that even today, maybe even today more so than any other time, that you need to be able to solve and not sell to a consumer. That's a hashtag I use all the time on LinkedIn. Yeah. And it's a brand philosophy, or a philosophy in general, I think we try to follow as much as possible, because consumers now can reach you so much faster than ever before, and in so many different ways. And they don't want to land on your web page and have to fill out 22 different boxes to tell you that they're upset about something. So you better be advanced enough to understand how to interact with consumers today, or you're going to lose the sale.
Yeah. Now, it was interesting when I was working with Michael back in those days, and we're talking about a couple of decades ago. You know, this is what he did, was test, constantly call his contact center and find out whether he's inquiring about a purchase or a customer support. He would constantly be doing quality assurance, quality checking, and he would act like a consumer. And they are obviously grew from more of a, shall we say, a more technically savvy end user to a more mainstream consumer to a small business, and then to the enterprise. So it was an evolution, whereas the others were coming more from the enterprise side.
You know, it's interesting. Again, most of our shows we record out in New York at iHeartRadio Studios out there. Again, we're very thankful for iHeart for hosting us often on the show. We are in the West Coast for our West Coast swing for season 3. There is a difference in philosophy to some extent. New York is kind of push and just let's go and let's run. And the West Coast sometimes tend to be more of an innovator in how do we take some of this data and dig back out, you know, down into the consumer side. Do you feel like you see that to some extent, or what are the differences you feel like you see between the two?
Well, I think, as everybody said for years, California is a bellwether state, and things seem to originate here and multiply from here, and people tend to look to California, even going back to the old you know, surfing days and the Beach Boys and everything, there was a whole aura that was created. And when you talk about a brand, California has a brand and has a massive brand following globally. And so, you know, what starts in California spreads globally very quickly and virally. And I think because of the diversity of the state, given the strong influence from Asia, from Latin America, you know, you've got also a lot of best and the brightest minds coming in from Europe, Eastern Europe, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand. I mean, if you look at Silicon Valley and how the makeup of that valley is, and its mindset is innovation, and it's also a very driven culture there. Down in Southern California, obviously the entertainment industry, the aviation industry, you've got lots of anchor industries down here that, again, attract a diversity of people. So economically, California is a powerhouse globally with, what is it, fourth or fifth largest economy in the world.
And some of that diversity is obviously seen in the what you've built with the CMO Council to some extent as well. You guys have a pretty wide portfolio of, obviously, even at the size that you are now, I mean, it touches CMOs of every single level to some extent. So right. You talked about how the concept came about, and how many years ago did you say that was now? Maybe 14 or 15 years ago?
Yeah, it was about 15 years ago, and we started to reach out and engage marketers. And the whole genesis was around being a peer-powered network, which was using the you know, actually aggregating what our members find valuable is sharing pain and gain. Their whole point is they need perspective. And our members are chief marketing officers, digital officers, data officers, customer experience officers. You know, the chief title is multiplying in different ways, revenue officers. And so where we come from is finding areas of strategic conversation. Our job is to identify issues, problems, challenges, risks, vulnerabilities. We audit and assess competency, proficiency, capacity, capability to do things. And what we highlight are where there are needs and requirements. The folks who support us like that because it helps them, let's say, soften the beaches, precondition the market, and it helps support and validate the type of solutions they're offering. And we've got now in marketing technology over 10,000 applications of one kind or another. And, you know, those marketers having to interact more with IT, interact more, you know, across functional areas because sources of data are multiplying. So the more applications you introduce, the more data you have to unify and integrate. And that's where the problems and weaknesses are.
What's been the most interesting thing as you've seen the council grow over the last 15 years? What have you found most interesting about that growth?
You know, the very first program we ever did thought leadership-wise was around, believe it or not, marketing performance measurement. And I venture to guess that everything that we did a whole series of forums around how to measure and quantify and establish metrics and measures for marketing. That's still a highly relevant topic today. And we didn't have the analytics and the big data and all of the crunching computer power that we have today to be able to quantify spend and do marketing mix modeling and understand impact of different and the nuances of different types of campaigns and channels. So
what's old is still new or what's new is still old,
exactly.
Or whatever that
so,
is.
So that's a hot button has been organizational transformation, marketing, changing, getting away from the brand centric mindset to creating more of a business focused, customer centric mindset. So what we've seen or what we've advocated is the shift from really towards chief growth officer and to customer custodian, customer champion, and advocate. Because marketers, to be pivotal in the role they play, they have to have more insights and knowledge and understanding of the customer than anybody else, be the voice of the customer, ensure that operationally and policy and practices of the company are customer sensitive.
There definitely seems to, again, be a continued need out there for those in the industry to continue to gain knowledge or understanding or have at least a place or a network where they can safely go and navigate questions that they have. As you guys have grown and maybe as you do less event-focused pieces and more perhaps online interaction? What are ways that members of the council can interact with each other today?
So we run a variety of different programs. We build campaigns where we go out and qualitatively and quantitatively engage with our members. So it, depending on the nature of the topic. We produce content. So we're a content factory, and we produce a vast amount of stuff that we think is
that will obviously continue to grow.
The reason why it's relevant, it's practitioner-based content. It's not something from an analyst or an editorial view. It's actually reflecting what the real world issues and problems are with our members. So they're willing to share that information. That's highly valuable. And we wish more universities and more of the curriculum that are out there would reflect some of the practical issues that are not the theoretical stuff that they tend to be swallowing in schools. So our job is to engage our members through webinars, through dinner dialogues, through conferences, summits, roundtables. We do a whole range of different programs. Sometimes we do them in partnership with
other organizations.
Sure. We plug in, for example, to Sapphire or to IBM Think or to some of the technology vendor conferences, but also obviously we're teaming right now with a CMO conference in Pakistan. Why? Well, because Pakistan's got 170 million or 200 million people at a very, dynamic consumer marketplace that nobody knows anything about. And what we're finding, particularly when you look at mobile, the emerging markets are full of new ideas and new approaches and new ways, omni-channel engagement. You see that more in emerging markets than you do here even.
And again, it seems as if you guys are always looking to see where there are opportunities to create more content out there to share. Again, we greatly appreciate you finding us, or us finding you to some extent, and for you guys allowing us to have a larger platform for our podcast. We're super proud that you guys have partnered with us this year. We talk about it as often, certainly, as we can. Where do you feel like, again, content takes you from here as you start to look at what's next for the CMO Council?
Well, we've got a whole set of programs right now. We're appointing regional representatives to help us develop markets. In this case, develop linkages and alignments and tie-ins. For example, with the Australian Marketing Institute, we have a program where they take our international content and they make it available at a discount to their members. They are more originating domestic content, doing certifying and training inside their country. We provide them with an outside view into areas that Australia's a very marketing-driven country, and they've got the government has put marketing as one of the skill developments, one of their top skills areas for skills development in the country. And we see that also in others. So we're going right now into Europe, and we're creating alignments with different functional organizations, marketing groups, as well as different vertical industry marketing groups.
It's pretty incredible to think that you built this based on basically a collection of peers sitting around almost for a coffee and kind of saying, we wish we had more of a network like this.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was, of course, it was.
Congrats.
It was.
If you don't hear that enough, thank you. That's huge.
Yeah.
Listen, that went fast, didn't it?
Yeah.
You know, we knocked that out really quick, but you pack a lot in there, which is great. You continue to be an advocate for us, which we appreciate. We see you consistently online, and we see many members of your organization online as well, pushing out great pieces of content. If you had one more chance to kind of learn one more thing, or if you had a chance to, I wish I knew more about, last question for you, what do you wish that was? What's still out there that you wish you could tackle that you haven't yet, marketing or otherwise?
Well, I think opening up some new markets where there may be cultural language issues and the challenges of taking our content to China, to South Korea, to
we hear about China a lot,
Japan and others.
Seems like it's an opportunity.
And I think there's a huge opportunity for us there, but you've got to find the right partner. So you've got to be sensitive. It's also, there are also cultural interpretive issues that you've got to be careful about as well. So that's one area for sure. And then I think, how do you monetize your businesses today in an age where so much content is freely available? And it's hard to distinguish between what's good and what's not so good. There are CMO organizations out there, but they aren't content driven, content centric. They tend to be a little bit more event activity, networking oriented.
Well, listen, we appreciate any opportunity that we've had to be able to at least provide some of that content to you and your team, as well as the chance for us to be able to interview some of your members. Again, you guys have been kind enough to share some of those opportunities, and hopefully many of those members have been happy to be part of the show. Listen, Donovan Neil May, if you want to find out more, it's pretty simple. You can go to thecmocouncil.org. You can go to thecmosuite.org. There are logos all over the place there, and you can stalk him on LinkedIn. That's how he and I started our, honestly, that's how we started our relationship. You sent me a note, or I sent you a note a couple years back. I think, you know, I said we really had a lot of pride in what you were building out there, and you were kind enough to say, well, you were happy with some of the content that we were providing out there. And that's sometimes how those relationships start. They just start like that. You bring something of value to each part of the party, and that's really how it starts. Agree?
Absolutely.
Well, listen, we appreciate you guys listening to us. This is where we're going to wrap up the show. And again, thank you so much for listening to the CMO Suite.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. Podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. Uconnex provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnex today for a free demo. Uconnex, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.